Hi, welcome back to another episode of Real World Serverless, a podcast where I speak with real world practitioners and get their stories from the trenches. Today, I'm joined by Gerard Sanz, who is a Google developer expert, and he used to work as a developer evangelist in the Amplify team in AWS. And he was also my co-author for the AppSync Masterclass, where he taught me a lot about the front-end development. So lately, right. He's been busy with the generative AI space, and he's been focusing on the Google's AI platform. So I'm really excited to have him here to tell us all about what Google's been doing with AI.
Right. Well, happy to join you. I mean, this is quite exciting because we have been discussing about different features that we have seen over the past few months, and it's nice to be able to put it in a conversation where we can just go over the different things that are happening in the space. So yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I guess for myself, I'm very much focused on AWS, so I haven't really been keeping tabs on everything that Google is doing. But I did see on social media some of the things that they announced at the Google I/O a couple of months ago, and I think I saw some of the things that you kind of brought up in your social media feed as well. And so I'm quite interested to hear about all the different services that they've announced, and how what's their approach towards AI and how they're doing, because Bard came out, had loads of problems.
Yeah.
But lately, I think ChatGPT has been really going downhill for me in terms of the quality of what it's generating. But Bard, on the other side, on the other hand, has been getting a lot better. So I guess before we dive into that, can you tell the audience a bit more about yourself? We kind of just started talking.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, as you mentioned, I'm a Google developer expert, and I work in AWS space for a while. I'm mainly an Angular expert, so I do a lot around Angular. Of course, that was kind of my beginnings. Then I moved into all front end. I obviously know about React. I also did trainings and content around Vue and other technologies, but mostly web and cloud. Right now, I've been focusing more around generative AI. I started doing a little bit of research on ChatGPT and GPT models, just because it was a new technology and I wanted to understand how it worked. And then just very recently, I mean, just a few weeks ago, when I heard about the new strategy from Google, I got really excited about their new platform. And basically, they just rebuilt all of the products and services that we are more used to see in OpenAI. We are now have the same products and services in Google. So I've been exploring these and, of course, comparing in my mind using OpenAI as a baseline. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on. We are also leaving open source on the side, which is also quite exciting. And there's different areas. So maybe people is more aware of maybe ChatGPT and then Bard, as these are the most popular tools, but there's a lot of different areas around images, maybe also speech or voice. There's a lot of things going on, but they fall into these large language models or generative AI. That's what I've been looking more recently.
Yeah, it has been a really, a super exciting but also crazy space. Obviously, that's the ChatGPT, the LLMs, but then I've also been spending a lot of time with Midjourney, and I've seen you've done some work with Adobe Firefly as well, and the Stable Diffusion. With something like a Stable Diffusion, you kind of have to run the model on your own computer. It's a bit more work and less easy to use compared to something like Midjourney. And the Midjourney have just released a new feature that lets you paint over specific areas in the output, so you can generate things, which is really cool. I've been spending some time just trying out things and see what you can do with that, and it's actually really cool. I guess I'd be interested to
That's right. That's right. I actually played with this feature a long time ago. Maybe if you follow me on Twitter, maybe you have seen that I've changed my profile picture with funny outfits. So I usually had maybe my own profile. I have like a regular profile that I use, but then I use this exact feature that you are mentioning to just change my profile, and basically I change my outfit. So I would be wearing a suit sometimes, I would be just wearing a casual t-shirt, and now I have like a chef outfit which if you go now on my Twitter, you will think like, who is this chef? I don't know this chef. And My joke is like, I'm cooking generative AI. So I'm with the chef outfit, which is quite cool. And you can do this very easily. And yeah, Midjourney is using this, but you can go to most of the tools and just brush around the area that you want to change in a picture. And then, of course, the only thing I ask for the model is to dress me with a fancy outfit, and then if I like it, then I change it. It's quite cool. I agree.
Yeah, and I've also been playing around with some of the voice cloning stuff. 11 Labs, for instance, they
all right, yes,
viral video a while back, and I've tried the Descript and a few other voice cloning sort of services. But maybe it's just because I've got a strong Asian accent.
Intriguing.
My voice training doesn't quite come out right. I tried 11 Labs, and I'll link my result in the video.
Yes.
Below. It actually yes. Came out sounding like Australian or Scottish. It's kind of weird.
right, because I mean, we need to remember how these models work. And in a sense, they look for the distribution, the common distribution. And that means that everything is average down to a mean. But then, of course, if you are coming from a background that is a little bit off the mean, which would be like the regular, boys, then, of course, we don't have Asian, slightly English or British accent. Not enough data, at least for now. But as the training and the technology evolves, you will find your niche. You will find your voice, your AI-generated voice, I'm sure. But this is fun. This is fun because it's the same. When you approach these large language models, because they give you this mean, let's say the mean. I mean, I don't know if people is familiar with the concept of a mean. So if you have a sample of different texts or different images or different voices, the mean will sit just in the middle of the distribution, which is all of the different dimensions or the different features that appear in your sample. They will concentrate in the mean, and that will be the average. So sometimes the main critique about these models is that they are a little bit average, or maybe not very individual or unique. They become like the average guy, the average response, the average political view, and then it's not that interesting. It depends. I mean, of course, for some areas it's quite interesting. For others, it's a little bit like, oh, okay, that would be the mean or the average opinion in that matter.
So, so I guess in that case, let's maybe switch to what Google has been working on, because they've announced this whole new AI platform. They, I think, announced a few services or rebranded
right.
a few services at the last Google I/O. For folks like myself who hasn't been keeping track of what Google's doing, can you maybe give us a summary of what's been coming out, what they're doing, what are some of the services, and how maybe how they compare to things like ChatGPT and
right.
Other services that made from OpenAI and AWS?
Right. So we have seen quite progress in in different companies. And of course, maybe Google hasn't been as fast as other ones like Microsoft that really jumped to the opportunity and also joined OpenAI as a partner. So they were first, but then of course everyone jumped on the generative AI train, and now it's the time for Google. And I think Google I/O was the opportunity to share, you know, their strategy and what they are focusing on. And of course, the event was the main, you know, the main moment to learn about this. Otherwise, we knew that Google was focusing on this, but we didn't know exactly what they were working on. So let me go through these. I have some slides, so because this is more visual in a sense. So these are some slides. I don't know if you can see this.
Yeah, if you share your screen, there we should be able to see it.
Okay. Let me go here more.
And for folks who are listening on the Spotify, I'll put a link to the YouTube recording so that if you want to see the slides, you'll be able to see that as well. But we do our best to describe what we're talking about as we go.
Okay. So I'm going to just go and share my whole screen. Okay. Yeah. That's yep, working now. Perfect. So let me just go to the slides. I mean, I'm going to just jump just because I have the slides. I mean, otherwise I would just talk about it. So this is the year event from Google, and they usually use this to make announcements and set the tone for the rest of the year. Most of the features are not released. So this is kind of a sneak preview into some of the features. And This is one that is only available in the US, but in a sense, this is the tool that will be available for everyone to do what is the fancy name of prompt engineering. So basically what you would do is you would go to MakerSuite and practice different prompts. You can see here a couple of examples. So basically you provide a context and what is that you want from the model, and then you can start using it. So it's quite easy. Here the example is a little prompt to write emails, which could be quite useful. And you just ask the model to set the tone, see what kind of emails you want to write, and then you just give it a little bit of context of what is the actual email. In this case, it's a request for holidays, which is probably something that people may need, or to send a nice email to their bosses to ask for holidays, etc. And then the model will just give you the output. You can also provide a sample if you have a template. Sometimes you find a template that you want to use, but of course you need to use your own details. So you could then wrap that and provide your details, and then it will generate that for you. Okay, it's like a little personal assistant.
Okay, so this is the MakerSuite. With this MakerSuite, you're talking to LLM, some kind of
right.
model. How is this different from just using Bard? Because using Bard, I'm just talking to a large the Bard LLM, I'm using prompts the same as what I'm doing here. So what's different about this MakerSuite?
Right. This is for developers. So Google Bard is also less. You can customize it less. So here you have full access to the model. You can change the different parameters that you have access to. And then you also can take this prompt and then build your own client in web or Node or whatever of the platforms that there are available. So this is more like for targeting developers. Of course, you can also use it if you know enough. You could create a specific use cases, but yeah, this is more targeted to developers. And then, of course, it's a nice environment. The equivalent in OpenAI would be the playground. So this would be similar to the playground in OpenAI.
Okay. So you can customize the parameters, and you can you choose different models to use? I guess because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking this kind of looks in a way similar to AWS Bedrock, with the difference being the Bedrock, you can choose the different models to actually use behind the scenes, different foundational models. Is this the same thing?
Right. So you have access to all the foundational models available in Vertex AI, which is the name that they gave to this new platform. And then the most popular models are Palm, the Palm models. And you can see here at the bottom, maybe it's too small, but it says Tex Bison. So this is for access to Palm for Tex. And this is one of the models. I mean, there's models for almost everything. There's models that will give you access to images, that will give you access to speech and vision as well, vision recognition, and also chat. I mean, this is the most basic, which is just following a request response kind of format. But then, of course, you also have the chat. The main difference being that the chat has to have a memory of the context of the conversation. So it still have your last request, but also the previous ones. And also it responds to your in a nice conversation style.
Okay, so Palm, is that Google's model? I guess their version of, say, the ChatGPT model. But right. Is that model, does Palm only do text? Or does it, or is it multimodal, similar to, you know, some of the things you can do with a ChatGPT code interpreter? You can upload the files and ask.
Right. So there's one clarification. The platform provides access to all of the foundational models, and each foundational model use a different modality. But there's no one model that is multimodal. So every model is specific for one type of input. So you will have one for text, another one for chat, another one for images, another one for speech, another one for code. But you need to specify which one you want to use. Of course, each of them come also in a chat format or just request response. So then you can also choose what is the one approach that you want to use. Let me move quickly to the other announcement. So this was one of the main announcements, but there's more. And I want to show you some of these, quite exciting. So they also announced this family of products which are more assistants. And this is the case of Duet AI. And there's a couple of products around this concept. And this one is working for the Google Workspace. And I don't know if you are familiar, this is for small companies. You can hire, it's based on a subscription, and you can get access to all of the products in Google, like Google Docs, Google Sheets. You also get a personal email for your business. And then in this little video, what is showing is that you get a conversation on the side, and you can ask not only for brainstorming or for ideas, but you can also interact with the actual tool that you are using. So then it will create actions in the tool. So in this case is someone trying to create a schedule while being in Google Sheets, and it will just go and create the content. But if you realize the content, it makes sense in the context of the application. So it's actually the next generation. The first generation will be BART. BART is a conversational chat AI, and it will follow a conversation, giving you access to different features, but it has no access to any tool. I mean, it has access to some tools, but not in context. Here we can see an example of a more advanced what is called an AI agent, which has access to the tool and all the features within the tool. So then it can help you, for example, to execute a task. It can maybe provide a draft for a task like we see here. And then this also opens the door to more exciting features. Let me show you another example of this applied. And as we have seen also with other products before, and probably you have used this with Microsoft environment.
I've used the Codepilot and I've used the Code Whisper as well. But I'm still on a waiting list for Copilot X.
Right. So this is exactly the same idea. So the concept within Google is called Duet AI, which will be an assistant that can help you achieve different tasks within the tool that you are using. In this case, it's Google Cloud. So you will see this in other environments, but for Google, this will be Duet AI. So then we have the same idea. We have a conversation on the site. And then in this small video, what it's doing is, okay, imagine you are deploying something in the cloud and you are not sure about the CLI commands. I mean, this is a very common action for a developer. So this will just do that for you. I mean, it can also assist you. It can also tell you like, look, the command that you are looking for would be this one, or it can also execute the action for you, which is what we saw with the previous example. So this is quite exciting because you get the, let's say, the idea of a ChatGPT, but the ChatGPT or Google Bard is actually having access to your environment and it can change the environment following your instructions. So this is quite exciting development. And I think this is where we will see more and more features being released. Okay, so I think that covers most of the things that were announced. Of course, there's more details, there's the different foundational models, etc. But one of the topics that was also mentioned during Google I/O was, of course, the focus around responsible AI. And this is probably something that we will see when we start developing using this technology. And these are some of the principles that Google is using for their products. And just mention that obviously what we want to focus is in what is not responsible AI. So here are a few examples. You don't want to create anything that can be used, you know, to harm people or to be weaponized or be used for surveillance or that it's unlawful. I mean, these are basic things, but when talking about AI, you will find a lot of examples of bad practices. And of course, when you see examples like cloning your voice, I mean, this is exciting for a content creator like yourself, because you can maybe create content faster and maybe keep your branding using your voice without you having to spend a lot of time editing your voice and doing cutting the video, etc. But of course, if someone gets hold of your voice, then that's a problem, because then it becomes a risk and it can be abused. And of course, we want to make sure that anything that we develop will take into account these points, which are just a general principles to follow and also to avoid.
I guess on that point, that's actually quite an interesting thing, because for anyone who has a public presence, you know, in the 11 Labs example, for instance, they're able to train these models for people like Joe Rogan, for Morgan Freeman, because you know, their data is publicly available, and there's tons and tons and tons of that. And for anyone you know, who's just been doing public speaking, there's recordings online that you can access for free. So already your data is available. So if someone was to clone my voice, they can just find data that they can use to clone my voice. What can companies like Google really do here to prevent unauthorized or third-party cloning of, say, someone's voice?
Well, there's few. I mean, of course, there's no way that you will remove every single risk around this, but the reasonable approaches will be to make everything traceable. So you, if anything happens, you can trace back to who caused, the ABOC, who caused the abuse. So that means leaving traces of every generation on your products. The second thing is monitoring. So you need to be following what's happening with these systems. You cannot just trust that your users will behave as you want. So you need to set some policies and you need to be monitoring. And these are common practices. I mean, working in AWS, that this, depending on the application, depending on the industry, you will take some measures to avoid any of these instances. And I think we just need to be mindful of the applications. I mean, of course, it depends. It depends what kind of feature you are providing. But if you are a developer, you need to consider this very seriously. Otherwise, you could be exposed, because if someone abuses the technology and then it traces back to your system, that's when it gets, because I mean, if you are a criminal, there's no way I can stop you to be a criminal. What I can stop you is to be a criminal using my product. That's the only thing that I can try to do. And that's why you need to leave traces. You need to monitor your system. And also, if someone sees an abuse, they can report it. And then you have something in place to stop that. But yeah, I mean, this is an open question. There's no way you can stop criminals. I mean, they will find a way to overcome policies and whatever measures you put in place. But I mean, you need to certainly put some measures in your systems.
Right, right. That makes sense. And obviously, with things like open source models being advancing so quickly, someone who's a bad actor can always just run those open source models on their own machines so that they're not.
Right, right. I mean, you can go on the street right now and start kicking a car. I mean, nobody will stop you, and there's no way nobody can stop you. I mean, the only thing that we can do is if someone sees you damaging property or doing something crazy, they can, call the police and capture you before you run. But that's exactly the same. I mean, we just need to put the things in place to, if you see some abuse, report it so it can be stopped. Maybe cannot be stopped before it happens, but you can certainly stop from keep going. And if you find the perpetrator, of course you need some laws to protect around these abuses. But I don't think we have a lot of these in place now, so we need to be careful. And obviously, if you see any abuse, it's a good idea to report it before it gets out of hand.
Yeah, I think the whole thing is moving so quickly. We are still pretty lagging in terms of just being able to catch up with, dealing with
banks. Right, right. But I mean, this is the same with hackers, no? I mean, remember any of these cases of kids accessing NASA or accessing, some website and then leaking information? I mean, yeah, you can do it. You may be crazy, you want to do that, maybe you do it, but then maybe you face the consequences as well. So it doesn't mean because something is technically easy, that is wise, or that is something that you should do. I think people need to be very, very aware of this. And yeah, you can go on the street and smash all the cars around you, but probably that's not very wise. Even if it's easy, technically, you just need to go outside the street and start kicking things. But that's on you. No, that's your responsibility. I mean, I'm not going to be policing everyone. But this is the situation right now. It's a little bit Wild Wild West, I guess.
Okay. Makes sense. And so I guess that's what Google is working on in terms of its new AI platform. And you mentioned that, you were, you know, doing lots of stuff with ChatGPT. So how would you compare ChatGPT or OpenAI's services with Google's offerings these days?
Right. So we probably can use these to show what's new in BART. Because that's a massive upgrade that they got recently. And maybe now that we are talking about it, let me just show you, because that's quite exciting. Let me just get quickly back. So let me move to, so I have few slides, but I'm going to just move to BART because that's exciting enough. And I think probably from the products that you mentioned, that's probably what the one that everybody's thinking. So this would be the ChatGPT within Google, and it's the alternative. It's free of use. There's no paid option, as far as I know. And this remains as an experiment from Google. So this is not something that you can use maybe at work or at least officially. It's just an experiment. You can play with it, see if it can help you. But you also need to be aware that it's not a product yet. It's an experiment. And it's quite advanced, I would say. Some of the features are even ahead of ChatGPT. And here, a couple of them. We have Google BART or BART having access to a Google search. And also now recently they added Google Lens. And that means that if you ask a question to BART, it will not only look into its own training, but it will do a Google search and use the Google search to give you the answer. That means that it's not limited by any, a cutoff date. If you use ChatGPT, the free version today, it goes up to 2021. I think it's September 2021. That's not the case for BART. BART, it can use any news that just happened today or in the last week. It doesn't matter. It will try to find some reference on Google, will run the search, see if there's anything there to use, and then give you the right answer. Another thing that is quite interesting, if you Android user, is this Google Lens edition. So if you are not familiar with this feature, it gives you live translation. It recognizes objects in your pictures. It can recognize where a picture was taken, what's the main feature in the picture, and things like that. And here is an example in the context of BART. So I just used this picture. You can imagine maybe being a school student and wondering what is this about. So this is a butterfly and is a blue morpho, apparently. I had no idea, but this is just an example of how you can use this feature. So you can use it basically to learn and use the latest information coming from Google search. So that's a nicer way to interact with this.
Yeah, and the way it's, sorry, can I just sure. add something there? Because the fact that you can access web pages, I think that's really, really useful, especially for someone like myself who does a lot of content and often have to write, help me write a promotion message or tweet or something.
That's right.
Courses, you can just put a link to your website, and it can read it, and then you can then help you write whatever promotional message that you want to do. Whereas with a ChatGPT, you can't really do that. They had this plugin, was it the Browse with Bing or something like that?
Right.
So that they disabled it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
They didn't really explain why, but yeah, that they took away the ability for the ChatGPT to be able to access
them. Right, because there's a lot of attention on ChatGPT, and there's a lot of bad actors, and they are kind of abusing the platform, looking for weaknesses and trying to bring it down. I mean, this is a little bit sad, but because ChatGPT is so popular, there's plenty of people trying to hack it. There's a few techniques where you use prompt engineering to try to unleash ChatGPT, and that's one way that people is abusing this service, just to get like more features for the same like free price. And then of course there's a funny hack there, which is if you use a Google search, of course you can publish the content online, then ask the content to ChatGPT and use the result to hack the behavior of ChatGPT. So it's kind of an injection attack, because you can control what is on the web. No, you can create a website very quickly in GitHub and then put some content there. Then you ask the specific question to ChatGPT, it will use a search, go grab the content, but the content is a reverse engineer prompt. So then the prompt will be like an SQL injection attack, and it's based on the result of the Google search, which is like, okay, come on, you can stop there. But people is having a laugh with that, and of course OpenAI is trying to stop this from happening. All the hackers trying to put the service down or abusing the service. So it's a little bit sad to see from an engineering point of view, but that's what popularity means. And yeah, I don't know if you have been on the sword or on the target of an attack. Like, it's like, why are you doing this? It's not the service. This is not the service. This is not how you should use the service. And they are trying their best, but yeah, they are having some crisis there in ChatGPT.
Oh man, that's why we can't have nice things.
Right. It's a little bit silly, but that's what happens. So let me show you some more examples, just showing what Bard can do with the latest version. So we have support to a lot of languages. This is a great addition. And then there's also, this is a little thing that you can now hear the answer. So imagine you are in your car and you want some fact or you want some answer to a question. You can get the response and then you can play the response in a nice voice and things like this. The other thing that I tried few.
So earlier you said the Bard is not multimodal, but in the example that you're showing me here, you are posting a picture with some ingredients, looks like a pork.
Yeah. So this is a task. This is more like a mixed model task. So I'm throwing a prompt, which is text, but then I'm adding context in the form of an image, just because they can now take images as input. And then it uses both. It uses the text and the image, whatever is in the image, using Google Lens. And then using those two sources of information, it creates the output. But this is actually the architecture behind is called an AI agent. So an AI agent has access to a set of tools. So actually what is happening here with Bard is that Bard is running a little loop waiting for you to ask questions. Then when it receives your question, it's looking at the tools that it has available. One of the tools is Google Search, as we have mentioned. Another tool that it has access is Google Lens. So then Bard is executing these tools. It has some freedom to say like, oh, let me run a Google search if I need it. Oh, let me run Google Lens into this image. So it's actually not that the model has different modalities, but the model has access to tools. It's more like a function call. I can delegate. I delegate to a tool, and then I use the result, the output from the tool for my output later on. So it's more like a branching. It's branching into different tools. It's getting the responses and then using that to create the final answer, which is still text. I mean, the answer that you're getting is text. So there's a bit of orchestration behind the scenes. I don't know how to put it easily for the audience.
I guess, is it similar to AutoGPT, those kind of autonomous agents that was quite popular a while back? When I say a while back, I guess like a month ago.
Right. I mean, this is an architecture to use the large language model in a more complex scenario, because the large language model can decide, oh, I'm not going to use my own knowledge. I'm going to look into a Google search, or I'm going to use a calculator, or I'm going to use, there's different tools. BART can also do exact calculations, which ChatGPT can without plugins. And they offer this for free. So then you can write a very complex calculation, like a large exponential, and it will give you the exact result. How it does that is because it's using a tool. So Google BART takes your input in text, in this case, it will be like a math operation, and it will think, okay, what tool I can use? Oh, I have a calculator available. So I'm going to just send the information from the operation to that calculator, get the result back. And then if the outcome is, you know, is good, use that to give you the final answer. But this architecture, I can show you a little bit of a diagram because I have this. But before we do that, because that's a more advanced topic, usually people just talk about the large language model, text or chat, but this AI agent is a little bit more complex. Let me finish with this, which is a little bit more introductory.
Okay.
And then we can go to a little bit more advanced architecture. But that's a very interesting topic. Still in Google BART, you can also use this Google Lens feature of using images, but also use code to generate code, let's say. So here, this is also an experiment that I did. So you just do, imagine you do a screenshot of a form that you want to implement in your application. And now you can take that screenshot, give it to BART and say, like, look, I'm building an Angular component. Can you draft like the skeleton for this form for me? And it will do it. It will just do it. And besides this example, I tried, of course, because I know some other languages, I tried for React, I tried for Vue, Vue 2, Vue 3, and all the different options that I could thought of, Svelte, what else. The only thing that it failed to do is if the language or library is very rare. Like if you try to use something rare, it will not know how to do it. But then one thing that you can do is provide, imagine you go to the starting guide from that library, you can grab a code snippet, add it to your query, and then most of the times it will be able to use that to generate the right code, which is really cool. So this is around code. Of course, it's not the same as having this in the tool. If you had this in Visual Code, then that would be better. But this is also for free. So I mean, this is something that you could use for specific tasks. Some other things, these are part of the new release. You can move any of the answers to maybe a Colab or Replit if you want. You can also create a message, as you were saying, and move it to a email or use it in a Google Doc if you're writing a document. So these are very, very cool. And then, of course, there's the features that are not available yet, but they are coming this year, and this is probably the most exciting, and is the integration with Adobe Firefly. And we talk about this and how it compares to Midjourney and Stable Diffusion. And actually, most of these tools in the last few months, they have improved like crazy. I remember last year, Stable Diffusion was terrible, like completely terrible compared to Midjourney, but they are advancing so fast that they are catching up with every single feature. And even you were mentioning the beginning, inline painting, or maybe Dream Booth, which is also a very interesting feature. And all of these features now are available throughout the different options. So I think one thing that we will see very soon, and not only around images, but also in large language models, is that the distance between OpenAI GPT models and the rest is getting like very, very small. It's getting like closer and closer every day that goes. And we can see this with Google models. We can see this with open source. And I think in the next few months, everyone will be either at the same level, or there will be, it will be difficult to say who is leading, because there will be many features and there will be like uneven, like very, very close to each other. And this is happening already, I think.
Yeah, I remember like when the DALL-E first came out, it was kind of groundbreaking. And then DALL-E 2 came out. It was, you know, I actually signed up pretty quickly to try it out. At the time, it seemed like, oh yeah, this is amazing. But then the, you know, you discover Midjourney, Adobe's Firefly,
Office
Shop has got generative, you know, review, and now Midjourney has got inpainting now as well. So it feels like everyone is kind of converging onto sort of similar capabilities. And I guess,
that's like
you said, Stable Diffusion is also just growing and getting better and getting all of these new features that elsewhere other people have introduced into their products.
That's right. I think probably the most relevant recent development in this space of images is this Dream Booth. So Dream Booth is, you can generate almost anything that you can imagine. No, imagine you want to set up an image and you have like an idea of what you want in the picture, and this is pretty easy. And you can achieve this with any of the models. The main problem was keeping the subject the same. Because the problem now is when you generate the next image, nothing matches. Like if you have like a character, like let's imagine this unicorn that we see in the picture, the bigger one. If I want to create more images with this unicorn, I don't want a different one. I don't want like a slightly different. I want the same exact unicorn. You are not able to do that. So if you imagine you have like a little character that you want to use in your content, no, you create like a little character that you want to repeatedly use in different environments and, you know, situations, you can do it. You can do it. And they created what it's called Dream Booth, and it's from Stable Diffusion. And then you give it some samples, and it's able to extract the characteristics of the subject. The subject being anything. It could be an object. It could be maybe something like a phone or furniture, or in this case, this unicorn. And then every time that you want to create a new image, it will be exactly the same unicorn, which for a lot of use cases, this is great, because you can imagine this working for fashion or for, you know, an e-commerce site. They have a specific product, but they don't want to spend, you know, incredible budget for a picture in a studio, or maybe outdoors. You need to create a picture outdoors. That's going to be quite expensive. But now you can take any object with this technology, Dream Booth, and just capture the object, and then you can put the object anywhere, which is awesome. I mean, you can do it also with yourself. So you can create pictures of yourself, you know, in different settings.
Yeah, making persistent characters is one of the more difficult things that you can do in the Midjourney. And I've actually tried quite a few different techniques that you know you can do to get there. It's not always 100%, but it's most cases, it's good enough. And I think I've seen a few content creators make storybooks, and that's where you do want to have this is the same set of characters to show up in different panels and pages of your storybook. But this is really, really interesting that you can actually do that with a Stable Diffusion now, just out of the box. And I hope, you can do this, easier.
It's quite heavy. It's quite heavy. You just need like 4 or 5 gigabytes. You need your machine to be fried for 45 minutes, and then you can play. I did myself a while ago, and I know that you asked me, but it's just too heavy. I mean, if I want to throw away my laptop, I will do it again, but it's just quite intense. So it's the same for any of these technologies, even the open source models, which are like the mini version of, you know, the big ones. These are quite intense in resources. One thing I can do, I think now we have covered most of the things that are interesting from, you know, the announcements in Google I/O. I think I can show you a little bit of the most interesting things. And we covered this a little bit, but this is a little bit of a nice diagram of what is happening behind the scenes, because I was trying to answer you this multimodal BART, apparently multimodal BART, but this is not what is happening. It's just that BART has access to these different tools. And here I put some of them. And another excitement development is that you can also give it a Python sandbox. Do you understand what is that? So basically, you give it like a closed environment, and then it can run little code snippets. So then, for example, if you want to run a function, imagine you want to do some string manipulation, or you want to run some very specific like juggling. Some of the people trying ChatGPT, they wanted to try to scramble a word. Imagine you want to take a big word and you want to scramble the characters, move the characters around. This is not possible with large language models, because of course the training, it uses either full words or groups of characters, but you cannot do like character operations, like moving around characters in a word. But with a Python sandbox, you can actually ask this to BART, and BART will be able to reverse strings or scramble the words or the characters, do character precision operations. And the way it does that is just creating the code, then run the code in a Python sandbox and giving you the exact result. The same for calculation. So this is how it works behind the scene. And if I show you a little bit more detail into that picture and how you could implement it, that's when you need to introduce libraries like LangChain. And it's basically a pipeline where you add these tools, and then the large language model has the option to introduce these calls in between, you know, the question and the response.
Yeah, we had the last two episodes. We had Randall Hunt from Kaland, as well as Matt Carey from Alios. They both talked about the LangChain.
Awesome.
I think that the whole last episode was pretty much focused on the LangChain as well.
Right.
So if anyone wants to learn more about LangChain, what it is, how it works, please follow the link in the description to look at the last episode, I think 81 or 82, where Matt kind of showed us how he used the LangChain to build Quiver so that you can upload PDFs and then you know, basically chat with your PDF. And also how he used the LangChain to build his code review GPT that can, I guess, look at your code, PR, and tell you what you're doing wrong.
Right. So here, this is the basics of an AI agent, like the ones that you were mentioning. And here we can see that we are just building a chat. And then you have the chat UI. You have a model, in this case would be a chat Bison from the Palm API. And then it needs a tool. In this case, it's the chat history. So it gives it a little bit of memory of what has been happening. And you can implement this using LangChain. Another thing you can do is add the calculator. Or if you want, you can also include a Google search or any of the things that I mentioned before. Another exciting development is this one that you just mentioned, which is if you give it access to a repository of documents, then it can do a search using a vector database and do a little query and then get the similarity around that query that you did and bring the documents that hopefully will answer that question. There's some problems with this approach, but I don't think we should get into these technicalities. But basically what happens is that the model if you have a model that has a small context, which is the case for ChatGPT and, you know, earlier models, then you don't have enough space. It's like you do a Google search, but you can only see the first result. So it limits you what you can do with this approach. And we have seen some improvements in the context length of the models, and probably the best model in that aspect is Anthropic Claude version 2, that gives you more than 100,000 tokens. So then approaches like this that depend on results, combining results, that makes it more useful. Because if imagine if you have 1,000 tokens for your context and you are receiving a query that it's a long PDF, if the PDF is exceeding your context window, you won't be able to answer questions because you will just get like little fragments. So this is quite exciting, but it's still like laboratory, you know, proof of concept, I would say. I wouldn't use that yet unless you have a big context window, because otherwise you get like a scramble results and it's not going to help you much.
So we are coming up to the top of the hour, and thank you so much, Gerard, for sharing all of the announcements from Google I/O. How do people, you know, if people want to find out more and learn more from you, how do they find you?
Right. So yeah, thank you for inviting me. I mean, these are exciting times, and I think the easiest way to reach out to me is on Twitter or X app. I don't know how to call it, but yeah, I'm very active on Twitter, and you can just find me by my name. So that would be Gerard Sanz on at Twitter, and looking forward to see what comes next in this area.
Perfect. You can find Gerard's contact details in the description below. So if you've got any more questions about Google's AI capabilities and the Bard, ask him for advice about the Stable Diffusion, how to not
right.
be running it, then please reach out to him. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. I want to thank you for your time. And see you guys next time. Take it easy, Gerard.
Ciao.
So that's it for another episode of Real World Serverless. To access the show notes, please go to realworldserverless.com. If you want to learn how to build production-ready serverless applications, please check out my upcoming courses at productionreadyserverless.com. And I'll see you guys next time.